many years of calisthenics and archery, but was not accustomed to having a large audience. Arity focused her sights on the target and took a deep breath, relaxing her muscles. She felt the light weight of the quiver on her back and gripped her bow tighter, tucking it at an angle across her body. Then she took 10 steps back, her brother and sister doing the same. In her peripheral view, she could see them smiling as they watched her. "Ready?" Arity began. "And go." They sprinted forward, gaining quick momentum, and at the same time, all three of them launched themselves into forward flips, tucking their legs. As she felt her body completing its arc, Arity reached back and snatched the arrow. She had it lined up and her bowstring pulled back as her feet smacked the earth. Her eye met the target in a blur as her knees bent, and she loosed the arrow. She heard the slaps of feet and pings of arrows beside her. In a rush, all three arrows hit the targets with synchronized swats. Donovan's wobbled in the outer ring. Vixie and Arity's both hit the inner ring, but not the bullseye. Still, the men raised a great cheer, and Arity laughed in relief. Vixie jumped up next to her. "Nice one, Vix," Arity said. A few men from Kalor stepped up with smiles and motioned to the targets.
"We try."
"Oh yes, please."
Arity and Vixie moved out of the way. Donovan was more than happy to assist the dark-haired men. When Harrison walked over to inquire of Wyneth's well-being, Arity stepped away with Vixie to let them talk.
"Very impressive, princesses," said a jovial voice behind them.
Arity and Vixie turned to find Tian standing there. Arity returned his smile and glanced past him to see Paxton walking slowly to join them, as if forced.
"Vixie, this is Tian Seabold, a local lad," Arity said.
Tian gave her a friendly nod.
"You're as full of spunk as they see."
"High seas." Vixie's eyes grew and her face turned a dark shade of pink, reminding Arity that her demure sister was less than 2 years younger than them and quickly maturing. Arity intervened on her sister's sputtering behalf.
"I'm sure you could do that stunt with your eyes closed, aye, Tian?"
He laughed.
"He doesn't have time for playful antics. Some of us have to work for a living."
Once again, Paxton's words and tone struck an uncomfortable chord. Arity eyed him, trying to figure him out. He looked over her in return, causing her heart to dance against her ribs, as if the two of them were alone. She wanted to level him with a witty quip, but her mouth felt glued shut.
"We spend most of the day with dreadful tutors," Vixie said, seemingly oblivious to Paxton's cutting remark. "The king says schooling is our job at the moment."
Arity wished her sister would hush, but she kept on.
"I just wish he'd fully lift this daytime curfew, so we could visit the stables again."
In truth, the curfew on the royal children was ridiculous, and Arity intended to speak to her father about it at once. They'd already begun lessons again. It was time to get back to normal as much as possible.
"You like to ride?"
Tian turned his eyes to Arity.
"Air's afraid of horses," Vixie answered for her, causing Arity to grit her teeth. "I'm not afraid of them, only when they go fast."
Vixie bumped her hip into Arity's, and the older princess wanted to strangle her.
"I thought you royal lot were supposed to be as lively as dolphins, doing tricks of all manners," Paxton said.
Unlike when Tian spoke, Paxton's words felt like accusations and judgments. He stared at her with laughing eyes. If he wanted a reaction from her, he was out of luck.
"You should see Air on the silks," Vixie said. "She's dazzling."
"Enough, Vix."
Arity was feeling uncharacteristically embarrassed, but she refused to appear rattled.
"I'm sure these hunters are not interested in our pastimes."
She cleared her throat and forced her eyes to Tian.
"Lochlannach is lucky to have hard-working lads such as yourselves."
His eyes and smile became soft and dreamy as he gazed at the older princess.
"And the kingdom is lucky to have a kind, smart, talented princess such as yourself."
Paxton crossed his arms, looking away. Vixie abruptly piped up.
"Do you plan to kill the great beast and marry my sister then?"
The girl watched Tian with a curious expression. Tian swallowed, his eyes darting over to Arity. Paxton chuckled without humor.
"Oh, seas." "Vixie," Arity whispered.
The rest of the words eluded her. It was time to go. A hush settled over the entire commons, and men began to raise their heads to the balcony, shielding their eyes against the bright sun.
Arity's father stood there, flanked by guards as he stared down at his three children. He found Arity and, with two fingers, beckoned her to him. He appeared unamused.
"Good day to you," Arity said to the Seabolt brothers.
She grabbed her brother and sister, looking around for Wyneth. She found her cousin standing over by a table, talking to none other than Lord Leif Elvy. They kept a respectable distance, Leif full of grinning confidence, and Wyneth smiling shyly. Harrison stood with them, his arms crossed in silence as he watched the two of them converse. Wyneth's eyes met Arity's, and she said goodbye to the Askamanian lord and Harrison, before gathering her skirts and rushing to meet her cousins at the gates. Arity sent a wave to Harrison, who only nodded. He seemed in a strange mood all of a sudden. Donovan and Vixie walked ahead of them, following two guards. Arity sidled close to her cousin, and they synchronized their steps.
"What were you and Lord Elvy chatting about?" Arity whispered.
Wyneth kept her eyes on the stone walkway.
"Nothing of importance. He was asking if I could do the trick as well. I had to explain that I'm not inclined toward physical talents."
Wyneth's primary talents were the arts, something Arity wished she could do.
"And what about Harrison? He seemed off."
Wyneth's eyebrows scrunched.
"Aye, he didn't say much, but I had the distinct feeling he doesn't much care for Lord Elvy.
I wonder why.
Protective of me, maybe. Bit of a flirt, that cold man."
"Indeed. Lord Elvy seems keen," Arity murmured. She wondered if the man knew Wyneth had just lost her beloved to the very beast he was hunting.
"He's agreeable for an Askamanian," Wyneth said diplomatically.
Under other circumstances, Arity would have probed for more, even joked about the man's agreeable muscled arms. But it was simply too soon to speak of other men to Wyneth, even in jest. And given that Leif was in the running for Arity's hand in marriage, it seemed uncouth. Arity wondered if the days of comfortable, easy conversation would ever return.
"Do you think Uncle Charles is angry?" Wyneth asked.
"Who cares?" Vixie scoffed.
"I'm sure he wasn't happy seeing Vixie and Donnie out there," Arity answered. "Probably thinks they're being a nuisance and bothering the men. Doesn't want anyone making jesters of the kingdom."
"I'm not a nuisance,"
Vixie's scoffing continued. Arity recalled the conversation they just had with the hunters and her sister's unfiltered questions.
"You have to be careful what you say to these men, Vixie. It's all very touchy and personal."
To her as well. Vixie rolled her eyes.
"You know I'm not one to hold my tongue."
"Aye, I know," Arity sighed.
"Well, all three of you were well received, I thought," Wyneth said. "The men needed a break."
"Agreed."
Arity linked her arm with her cousin, then her sister.
"You'll join us so you can tell him that yourself."
Wyneth sighed.
"Oh, fine. I'm not afraid of Uncle Charles. Your mother, on the other hand."
The girls giggled quietly as they entered the castle. Chapter 14.
"Must you always have something snide to say in the princess's company?" Tien asked as he followed his brother to the sharpening post. "I don't know what you're talking about."
Paxton removed his quiver and began taking out his arrows, examining the head of each. Tien stopped in front of him.
"You needn't be so gruff with her. It's embarrassing." "Deep seas, Tien," Paxton muttered. "Men don't embarrass."
"You don't embarrass, Pax. Sometimes I wonder if you feel anything at all."
Tien dropped his quiver with a clatter and sat, draping his arms across his bent knees. Paxton ran his thumb over the tip of an arrow. Just a fraction more pressure and it would cut through the tough pad of skin. Tien knew nothing of what he felt, and he planned to keep it that way.
"All I'm saying is that I wouldn't kill you to show a bit of kindness to Princess Arity. She's been nothing but pleasant to us."
"It's all an act."
Paxton slid the sharpened arrow back into the quiver.
"Must you always be so cynical? Can you not acknowledge genuine kindness and beauty when it's right in front of you?"
Paxton grunted. He didn't want to think about her. Arity. How she'd controlled her body so fluidly as she'd flipped and landed with complete grace, her hair fanning out like a sunset. Or that she'd focused on the target and owned it, an action that spoke to Paxton in a language he could understand. He'd never in all his days seen a lass do something like that.
It made him wish he could dive into the deep, dark ocean afar to cool himself. He longed to rid his mind of these unwelcome thoughts. Again, Paxton grunted. The royal children clearly had too much time on their hands, and despite what his brother thought, he believed every person needed to be put in their place from time to time, especially the wealthy ones.
Here.
Paxton tossed the sharpening block to Tyrn.
Hurry up and tend your arrows, so we can rest before dinner. Focus on the hunt, not the lasses.
Perhaps he should have taken that advice himself. From his spot on the ground, Tyrn's eyes widened. Paxton turned to see what he was gaping at. Lord Leif Alvi had approached them with a rolled map in hand. Paxton admired the man's vest of fine rabbit fur.
Your locals, correct? Leif asked. Aye.
Paxton stood and his brother followed.
From Cape Creek, a village 15 miles northeast of here.
Leif nodded, unrolling his map.
My men are adamant about hunting on their own for now, and since the total number of hunters are great enough, I have agreed.
The lord sounded reluctant, but Paxton knew part of what made a great leader was compromise. So they would keep to their original groups. Leif needn't state the obvious, that his men wanted the glory of the kill and the prize of the foreign princess to themselves. Things Leif could surely appreciate, even if the methods of his men weren't the smartest. Harrison and Samuel approached, nodding their greeting as they joined the conversation. Together the men plotted the best areas for each of the four groups to scout that evening. They decided to hunt in a slightly closer range, rather than spreading out as they had the night before. This would give them the opportunity to give chase to the beast, from group to group, possibly keeping it in their sights. Once everything was decided, they called over the leaders of the Zorfinin and Kalorian groups and explained the plan. All were in agreement. With that, Paxton and Tyrn retired to their small tent in the corner of the commons and slept deeply, garnering energy for what was to come. Raised voices of their fellow hunters woke the brothers. They jumped from their cots, running out to see what was happening. The men were grouped, surrounded by guards, and as the brothers got nearer, Paxton noticed four new hunters standing in the middle, tall and proud in fitted black outerwear, with black headscarves wound about their faces. Wicked bows made of animals' antlers were slung across their backs.
"Not hunting with women,"
Paxton heard Volgin grumble loudly. His eyes went back to the newcomers, to their high cheekbones and long lashes against dark skin. In a flash, one of the women stepped forward and whipped out her bow, knocking her arrow and stretching it back just inches from Volgin's nose. Her stance was strong. Paxton felt his eyes go as wide as Volgin's, who had lifted his palms in surrender. That man hadn't made any friends on this hunt. A hush ran through the hunters.
"Zandali hunt," the woman said in a thick accent. "Whoa,"
Tyrn whispered, matching Paxton's astonishment. The Zandali women were famous throughout Eurona, but were spoken of as if mythical, a matriarchal tribe in southern Zorfina, between the desert and the sea, bordering Kalor, a tribe where the women ruled. When Lochlin women were feisty, the men often joked that they were going Zandali. But these women were nothing to joke about. They looked as if they could snap a man's neck with their bare hands.
"Easy now," said one of the guards. "Lower your weapon."
The woman grunted out a word Paxton couldn't understand. Then slowly she took her bow from Volgan's pale face, scowling at him.
"Everyone step back so we can figure this out."
The guards pushed their way in and faced the four women. The main guard hesitated, as if he didn't quite know what to say. Then he lamely asked,
"Hey, what can we do for you?"
"Zandali hunt," the woman repeated in a solid voice.
"Zandali?" asked the guard. "Are you saying you are a Zandali, and you want to hunt?"
"Speak Zorfina."
She rolled the R harshly, making her sound even tougher. The guard massaged the back of his neck and looked toward the male Zorfinan hunters. They shook their heads and stepped back, as if they wanted nothing to do with the Zandali women. The guard spoke to another guard over his shoulder.
"Go to the castle and find someone who can interpret Zorfinan."
Awkward minutes passed in which the male hunters stared down the female hunters, some whispering, as the women stared back with challenge in their eyes. Tyrn gave Paxton an awestruck look, as if enjoying the show. Moments later, Paxton was surprised to see Princess Arity return with an older officer at her side, flanked by guards. Her eyes went to the women with curiosity.
Eh, princess, said the guard. These women, I believe they wish to join the hunt, but...
Arity's eyebrows went up as she moved forward. Guards pressed around her, forcing the male hunters to step away. Arity spoke to the women in Zorfinan, accentuating the inflections, surprising Paxton with her level of fluency. She looked so petite standing there, conversing with an upward tilt of her head. A smile of admiration split her face, and she turned back to the officer.
These are women of the Zandali, truly. They've sent their strongest hunters. Isn't this brilliant?
The man's eyebrows shot up as he eyed the women in disbelief. After several minutes of conversing, the princess nodded and turned to the hunters.
Right. She cleared her throat. The Zandali will join the hunt. If one of them kills the beast, the brother of their head huntress, Zandora, she motioned toward the woman she spoke with, will collect the reward on her behalf.
Once again, the princess cleared her throat. Hunters muttered to one another under their breath.
Wait just a moment, the officer frowned. Your Highness, I think we should discuss this with your father.
There is nothing to discuss, Arity snapped. They are brave enough to join the hunt, so they shall hunt. I have accepted their terms. It is done, and I will alert the king.
She lifted her skirts and her fists and shared a nod with the Zandali huntress, then kept her eyes firmly ahead as she marched away. The guards quickly followed, leaving the hunters gaping in shock. Paxton grudgingly admired the princess's open acceptance of the unorthodox agreement. Zandora's gaze scouted the males as they all slowly retreated into their respective tented areas, whispering their dismay and casting backward looks. Paxton, Tian, Samuel, and Harrison stood there glancing around at one another before moving forward to the women. The Lachlan men stood eye to eye with the Zandali women, who were a strange mix of feminine features and rough edges. They wore a stretchy sort of black cloth belted around their narrow waists, with head coverings that hid their hair and necks. They appeared as warriors, in contrast to the male hunters from other tribes of Zorfina, who wore browns and tans to blend with desert sands. Their eyes were differing pale shades. Harrison was the first to give a small bow of his head.
Welcome to Lochlannach.
Paxton wasn't sure if the woman understood, but she inclined her head as well, and the rest of them did the same, showing their respect.
I can't believe you're here, Tian said,
and Paxton sensed a babble coming on.
We've grown up hearing about the Zandali, but we didn't know if you were real. High seas, you're amazing. You're...
Tian,
Paxton cut in.
That's enough.
Tian, unperturbed, turned his awestruck eyes back to the girl before him, who appeared to be the youngest. She reached up and grabbed his chin, giving it a pinch in her fingertips. Zandora chuckled.
Kosh Teep, she purred in Zorfinan, and the women gave mischievous laughs.
Tian let out a nervous laugh of his own as the women sized him up. Paxton coughed into his hand to hide his mirth.
Join us for a meal, Harrison asked,
pointing to the tables which were currently being laden with food. Other hunters were beginning to make their way over again. As the Lachlan men turned to lead their group to the table, the younger Zandali squeezed Tian on the bottom, making him yelp, his eyes going round. The women kept walking, and Paxton could not hold back a chuckle at the scandalized look on his brother's face. Thankfully, none of the other hunters seemed to have noticed.
By the tides, Tian hissed. I feel like a piece of meat.
He didn't sound particularly upset about it, though.
Aye,
Samuel chuckled under his breath.
I think someone wanted a slice of Tian for supper.
Tian couldn't stop smiling, unlike the other hunters who were all still frowning and stewing about this newest development. The Zandali didn't back down from anyone. They met the stares head-on, throwing off airs of confrontation. Paxton was enjoying the addition of the huntresses more and more, especially as they sat down to eat with their withered hands, grubbing with the best of them. When one of the Zorfinan hunters stared at them from under his head wrap, a snarl of contempt on his face, Zandora held up two curved fingers, like snake fangs, and hissed at him. He pursed his lips and dropped his eyes. The women laughed. Paxton wondered what the story there was. Zorfina, like most of Irona, was patriarchal.
Were the men from the other tribes ashamed of this matriarchal tribe in their midst? Kingdom politics were a funny thing, to each his own. The Seabolt brothers grabbed turkey legs and slices of hearty bread before gearing up for the night's hunt. The sun had already dipped low over the sea, casting shadows within the West Commons as lingering sunlight sparkled off the far waters of the ocean. The beat of the Calorian drum rose up. Sounds of the hotland's ritual filled every space of the commons as men and women prepared. Anticipation filled the space between the hunters. As a whole, they kept their voices down, speaking only as needed. Quivers and bows were donned, long daggers sheathed and leather boots tied. In a moment of surprised unity, men and women of all the nationalities nodded in respect as their eyes met. The hunters raised their gazes to people filling the balcony above. In front was the entire royal family, come to see them off. The woman standing next to Lady Wyneth dabbed at her eyes with a handkerchief. All around them were servants and guards. Nobody spoke, but an understanding stretched along the autumn winds. Paxton spared his last look for Princess Arity. Even from afar, she seemed to be looking right at him. She brought her slender fingertips to her lips and left them there, as if her hand could keep her emotions from escaping. Paxton heard Tyrn sigh. The sap. In silence, the hunters grouped together, the Zandali joining the Lachlans without question as they set out. Paxton did not look up again. Chapter 15. The Lachlan and Zandali hunters exited royal lands through the South Hold and followed along the North Creek, keeping an eye out for animal tracks. Now and then someone would point to deer prints, but nothing of major interest. The rich men walked loudly through the dry leaves, leading with hard heels. Zandora turned with pinched eyebrows to see who was making all the noise, and though the men looked momentarily frightened at her pointed attention, they didn't seem to understand why she was throwing hostile looks their way. When Paxton gritted his teeth in annoyance, Tyrn backtracked the men and began showing them how to walk light-footed. They were surprisingly open to the suggestions and made progress, quieting a fraction as they became more aware of their bodies and the earth beneath them, the way a hunter should. Paxton breathed easier, admiring his brother's gentle way with people. It's good there were men like Tyrn alive, or there'd be no peace in all Eorona. The night was blessedly warm. Paxton and Tyrn found a large, half-hollowed log and hunkered behind it, back to back, pulling their quivers to the side. The Zandali refused to sit, opting to lean against trees so they could see in different directions. Paxton's eyes adjusted when darkness descended, his hearing heightening as sounds of night came to life. He settled into his body's awareness of his surroundings, muscles tense and ready to move at a moment's notice. But like last time, all was still for many hours. The Zandali never sat or moved. Their determination and stamina was unmatched by any of the men, who often fidgeted or grunted quietly. In the deep recesses of night, when his frame became heavy and his legs went numb, a noise rang out. At his back, he felt Tyrn stiffen. The sound had been faint, like a distant shout. Paxton held his breath as he listened intently. There it was again. Zandora lifted her arm as some kind of signal to the other Zandali. A shout from afar came louder this time, followed closely by others. The hunters jumped to their feet.
It's coming from the east, Harrison said. The Calorians, Paxton added.
Without discussion, they sprinted into the dense trees, away from the water and toward the sounds where the Calorians were stationed eastward. As he ran, Paxton pushed through jagged branches that whipped against his face. He cursed and kept running, too wild to feel any of it. It seemed like only minutes later when a low, inhuman sound filled his ears. Paxton slowed his steps and Tyrn grabbed his shoulders from behind to avoid colliding into his back. Together they peered into the trees, moonlight casting shadows through the leaves.
Listen, Paxton whispered.
The other hunters stopped as well. Above their panting breaths were more yells from men, closer now, and an unmistakable roar, feral and vicious. The hairs on Paxton's arm stood on end as Tyrn's fingers dug into his shoulder. Zandora hissed low. The great beast was near. One of the wealthy men shook his head and stepped back.
"She's alive."
He sounded ill, his eyes wide in the moonlight.
"We have to help them."
Paxton tore into the trees once more, sheer determination overpowering his fear. As the Lachlan men and the Zandali crashed through the underbrush, sounds of the Calorian men became clearer, yelling war cries. They were herding the beast straight for them.
It's coming,
Tian shouted from behind him. The two youngest Lachlan lads climbed hurriedly into the nearest trees with their bows. Two of the wealthy men fled to the south. Paxton, Tian, Harrison, and Samuel found shelter behind trees, some standing, some kneeling, all with weapons at the ready. Paxton caught the glint of Zandora's long, sharp arrow where she knelt within bushes. He peeked around the tree trunk and watched slivers of the wood exposed by moonlight. Tian sidled close to him, watching from the other side. He'd heard descriptions of the beast, pictured it many times in his mind. But as it burst through the brush, nothing could prepare him for the infamous creature. It was unlike any animal he'd ever seen. A mixture of scales and coarse dark fur, beady black eyes and tusks that curled to the side around a mouthful of sharp teeth. Massive paws with oversized claws. The people hadn't exaggerated its size. Paxton's jaw clenched in horror as it barreled toward them on all fours. A barrage of arrows bounced off its thick body. The beast stood and gave a great roar, shaking the ground, and Paxton thought he saw dark fur glistening under the beast's squatty neck. Blood. Paxton broke from his shocked trance and sent an arrow flying at the beast's mouth. As if sensing the approaching danger, it lowered its head, and the arrow pinged off its skull, falling to the ground like a mere gnat. Paxton swore. All at once, a group of ferocious Calorian men broke through the trees behind it. The next moment was chaos. Paxton didn't dare shoot while so many men surrounded the beast.
Stay here,
he told Tian as he rushed forward.
I don't think so, brother,
Tian responded from behind him in a shaking voice. Paxton wanted to argue, but there was no time. The great beast spun and crouched, preparing for the Calorian attack. When the men got within reach, the beast swung its arm in a flash, throwing three men into nearby trees. It slashed its claws through another man's belly. Paxton wrenched his dagger from his waist. At once, he, Harrison, and Zandora leapt high onto its back. The beast was nearly wide enough for all three of them and smelled pungently of wet decay. Before Paxton could get a grip, he felt himself soaring haphazardly high into the air until his body smacked the ground hard, knocking the wind from his lungs. Through his wide eyes, he saw the beast running straight at him, staring him down. He raised an arm to shield his face. The creature never stopped. It kicked him in the ribs as it ran past, its claw ripping the skin of his arm, sending him tumbling in pain. He lost his knife somewhere in the brush.
Pax!
Tian crouched over him as he fought for breath, his eyes frantic.
You're alive, thank the seas. Here's your dagger.
Tian leaned over him and shoved the knife back in his sheath with shaking hands, just as a blood-curdling yell sounded from a man behind them. Pax tried to sit up and hollered at the jabs of pain searing through his body.
Don't move, brother. You're hurt. You need to put pressure on your arm.
Pax absently grabbed his bleeding arm and lay there in dismay, watching as the great beast tore through hunters with no effort at all. And yet it didn't seem as if it wanted to fight. It seemed as if it wanted to get away, as if the people were a nuisance in its path. Tian sat up on his knees and shot an arrow just as the beast raised its head. It nicked the side of its neck, and the great beast roared, stumbling as it swatted at the spot.
You hit it, Pax said.
The effort to speak sent agony through his ribs. One of the wealthy men somehow ended up in the beast's fleeing path.
Get out of its way,
Paxton yelled hoarsely, grimacing. The man stared up at the monster in sheer, stunned terror and let loose a horrible, high-pitched scream. Paxton wanted to cover his ears against it. The youngest Sandali woman jumped in front of the man with a wild shout, brandishing a hooked dagger. To Paxton's confusion, the beast paused, sniffed the air, and then whacked her aside with the back of its paw. She cartwheeled, airborne. Paxton could see how she was about to land and the angle of her knife, but there was nothing anyone could do. Her dagger pierced straight through her gut as she fell. The Zandali girl seized for a moment before going still. The monster grabbed the screaming man with both massive paws and shoved his waist into his gaping mouth. It held the man between its teeth as it bounded away on all fours into the dark woods. The blood-curdling cries lessened and became fainter, but never stopped, echoing through the forest. Paxton numbed himself to the revulsion of it, forcing himself to think straight. He ignored Tian's objections and stood, his torso banded by bruises already.
We have to follow it.
You're not well enough, Tiern said.
Stay here. Wait.
Panic flooded Paxton's body as he watched his brother sprint into the trees with Harrison, Samuel, Zandora, and a Calorian. He followed at a pathetic pace and made it a quarter of a mile before he fell panting against a tree, holding his ribs. When he caught his breath, he moved again, this time only at a jogging pace. He'd never felt so worthless, but he couldn't stop, not while Tiern was out there with the beast. As sounds of the rushing nearby river became apparent, Paxton heard voices. Tiern and the three others came running into his sight and stopped when they saw him, except for Zandora, who rushed on to tend to the injured huntress.
By the depths, Paxton, are you mad? Tiern said with a scowl of disbelief. You shouldn't have followed. Look at you, bleeding everywhere.
Where is the beast? He asked.
It ran into the river and submerged itself, Harrison said, shaking his head. The beast dived in like a bear, and we never saw it come back up. It took the man with it.
He cringed. What an awful way to go.
So the beast can swim, Paxton mused.
Prints they'd found by the water had led him to believe it was a possibility, but he'd hoped the beast was land-dwelling only. Now he knew why it was so hard to find and trap.
Come on, Tiern said.
He lifted Paxton's arm across his shoulder, making him wince.
Let's get you back to the castle.
Daylight is coming,
Harrison nodded up at the lightning sky. Samuel and the Calorian ran ahead to inform the others of what had happened and help the injured back to royal lands.
The beast has a weakness,
Paxton said. Ignoring his pains, he walked as quickly as he could, clutching his arm. Harrison and Tiern both nodded and said in sync,
Its neck.
Problem was, the beast's head was like a boar's. It hardly had a neck to speak of. Its head slumped down to its shoulders and only raised slightly when it roared.
One of the Calorian men said they'd slashed across its throat when they first attacked it, Harrison explained. That's why it was running. It had been injured.
Good, Pax said.
The beast was stronger than he could have possibly imagined, but at least it had a weakness. That, at least, was a start. Chapter 16 8-year-old Stefan had learned to be the first one out of the schoolhouse each day and to run like the wind through the soybean fields, all the way to their lean-to hidden in the forest. As the son of a registered lashed and rambling brook of Lochlannoch, it was never a good idea to dawdle. But this day he had to stay behind at his teacher's request. Her lips were pursed as they stood before the class's small aquarium where baby rainbow trout floated belly up.
Did you kill the fish, Stefan?
The boy shook his matted head insistently.
No, ma'am.
You know the rules. You're not to touch any living thing in this class. Your gloves are to stay on at all times in this room.
I understand, miss. I promise I didn't touch it. And I'm not lashed.
Her lips pursed tighter.
So you and your mother say.
The boy's chest filled with the heat of shame and frustration. He dropped his head and mumbled.
I saw the other boys poking it with a stick.
It is not proper to tell lies and blame innocent people when you choose not to take responsibility for your actions. The other children told me they saw you.
Her voice filled with a scary sort of satisfaction.
Take off your gloves, Stefan.
He knew what she wanted. She wanted to see lash marks. He slowly pulled off the threadbare gloves and held out his hands. His teacher backed away to a safe distance, then bent slightly to get a closer look. She frowned at the sight of his clean, unmarked nails and stood tall again.
Leave, and stay away from the fish tanks from now on.
Stefan pulled his gloves back on and grabbed his bag, rushing from the room. A quick glance around the schoolhouse showed that the other children had gone home. He ran through the long grass until he hit the village's main path, which would lead to the soybean fields by his house. As he turned a corner at the Reefpool farm, he slid in the gravel, almost crashing into two women in his path.
Whoa, dear one. Careful now.
The woman wore a light hooded covering that hid most of her face, and she talked funny. Stefan scrambled to his feet and was set to keep running, when a voice rang out from the rickety steps of the nearby house.
Sees no.
The last thing Stefan wanted was to attract the attention of Farmer Reefpool.
Watch out, ladies. Don't let that boy touch you.
The two women and Stefan both turned their faces up to the man on the steps, boots covered in dirt and face red from the sun. A boy from Stefan's school was at the man's side, scowling down at him.
His mama's lashed. Andy's trouble.
The woman's head snapped to Stefan, and he felt pierced by the icy blue eyes of the one who'd spoken. Her hood had fallen back a little to reveal shining black hair, and the prettiest face Stefan had ever seen. But those eyes, they seemed to dissect him.
Is that right? The woman crooned in that strange accent. Are you dangerous, boy?
It took him a moment to register her words. Then he shook his head. Half a second later, he felt a sting as something sharp bashed into his arm. The woman gasped and looked up at the steps. The farmer's son threw another rock, this time hitting Stefan in the chest. He grabbed his rib in pain.
Get away from those ladies, the boy yelled.
His father smirked. Stefan stumbled as he spun and then ran, not looking back. After watching Stefan disappear into the fields, the woman stared up at the man, a small smile gracing her lips.
Thank you for saving us.
The man tipped his chin down.
Our pleasure. You don't sound like you're from around here.
The woman moved closer to the bottom of the steps. One still kept her face hidden under her cloak's hood.
We are traveling through from the lands of Kalor, looking to trade spices.
Ah.
The farmer nodded in appreciation. Trading was his livelihood.
Never been to Kalor. Heard they haven't fared well since the wars of your owner.
The woman eyed the farmer's shanty house.
It seems most lands have not fared well, sadly. Rokato left quite a lot of damage in his path.
The man growled at the name Rokato, crossing his arms.
That he did.
We have many tales where I'm from.
The woman slowly made her way up the steps, pulling her hood back to reveal her full beauty. The man and his son stared, relaxing their stances as she neared, as if enchanted by her voice.
They say if Rokato had had a better plan, and had not been so impulsive, he would have succeeded in taking over the kingdom.
Well,
the man breathed, mesmerized by her eyes.
That's a frightening tale.
She continued.
And they say Rokato had a son, who few knew of, that he has descendants who have been carefully planning how to succeed in all the ways he failed, for the lash to have power and respect once again.
She smiled in amusement.
Can you believe such tales?
More like nightmares, the boy sneered.
The woman bent and patted his cheek, smiling.
Indeed.
She stood.
Thank you again for saving me from that horrible boy. I don't know how helpless people like me could survive without capable people like you.
Neither the man nor boy objected when the beautiful foreign woman reached out to grasp their hands, in apparent thanks. Yet 3 short beats later, both fell to the porch in a pile, limbs limp with death. The woman stared down at her fingers, her heart accelerating in thrill as she watched a new line rise beneath her nails to join the many others, with scarcely a space between them.
We will burn this disgusting hovel.
She glanced down the steps at her companion, who hadn't moved during any of this.
Make certain no one's coming.
Yes, Rosaria,
the girl said. She pulled back her hood, revealing a jagged scar across the side of her olive-skinned face. The two women looked up and down the empty path, before bending and taking hold of the wood beams of the porch with their hands. That afternoon, young Stefan watched as flames rose to touch the sky from the other end of the vast soybean fields. An acrid breeze blew past. His mother lay a bony hand on his shoulder.
That looks like Mr. Reefpole's house.
Stefan nodded, but he didn't understand. He'd been there 20 minutes before, and there'd been no sign of fire.
He's not a nice man, but I wouldn't wish that upon anyone, his mother murmured.
Again, Stefan only nodded.
Good day, lashed one.
Stefan jumped, and his mother let out a startled noise at the sound of the foreign woman's voice. She must have come through the forest rather than the fields, staying hidden. The other traveling woman remained a short distance away, her face shrouded behind a draping hood. Sudden trepidation filled Stefan. His mother shoved him behind her, voice shaking.
We don't want any trouble. I'm clean. Look.
She held up a trembling hand to show her unmarked nails.
What a pity.
The foreign woman moved closer, running her ice-blue eyes over Stefan's mother. Even though the woman seemed nice enough, something about her felt strange to Stefan. He picked up a stick and held it up, ready to use it. The woman cocked her head at him and gave a low laugh.
Stefan!
His mother snatched the stick away, but kept it in her own hand at her side. The woman ignored the stick and focused on Stefan's mother's face.
You should be using your magic. You should be living in a proper home and have meat on your bones. Your son should have the honor of his peers, not their judgment.
Who was this woman, and why was she saying these dangerous things to his mother? Stefan peeked up at his mother's gaunt face. Her mouth hung open wordlessly.
You are like so many I have encountered, the foreign woman continued, her eyes sad yet fierce. Frightened into shameful submission. This is not a life, my dear.
The woman walked to the dead garden beside their house, the vegetables that rotted in an overabundance of rain. She crouched beside a wilted squash vine and took a stem in her hand. Stefan watched in wonder as a trail of green moved from her hand, up and down the stem, down into the ground where the roots lived, and into the large, spiky leaves. Bright yellow flowers budded, then bloomed, falling off as the flesh of a yellow squash pushed outward, oblong and perfect. In minutes, she'd grown food with a simple touch. It was the most beautiful thing the boy had ever witnessed. Stefan's mother raised a trembling hand to her mouth.
See what you could have, asked the woman. What you should be enjoying. Your magic can defy seasons and weather. It can defy disease and poverty.
Another breeze danced across their skin, bringing choking scents from the fire. The woman stood and put her hand out to touch the wisp of smoke.
Can you feel the winds of change? Will you grasp it as I have?
She closed her hand around the air and smiled. The fervor in her eyes sent a jolt down Stefan's back. And then he noticed her purpled fingernails. His mouth and eyes gaped open, his heart hammering in fear at her nearness.
I'm sorry, miss, his mother stuttered. I don't know what you mean.
Soon you will.
The woman continued to give his mother a knowing smile.
Be ready.
Stefan's mother pulled him close as the strange woman turned, walking into the path of smoke. Chapter 17. Paxton was taken straight into the infirmary wing of the castle, along with four other men. Several refused magical treatment. Eight had been killed that night. Six Calorians, one Lachlan, and the youngest Sandalee. Paxton considered himself lucky, though his injuries were worse than he'd first assumed. The gash on his arm gaped, filled with dirt. A path of now dried blood had run down to his hand, soaking his tan tunic, so he removed it. His back, chest, and stomach were bruised, and on his left side he had cracked ribs and several severe scratches where the beast had kicked him. But he was alive. He leaned against the wall on the cot in the infirmary room where the guards had left him alone. The room was small and clean, with only a cot, a side table, and a chair. He'd cleaned his wounds and now sat waiting. Without a knock, the wooden door opened and an old woman stepped in, pushing a cart with a covered plate. She had a long gray braid across her shoulder. Her eyes were wise as she approached Paxton. Perhaps it was in his imagination, but he could have sworn he felt static in the air. Energy. Immediately he knew the woman was lashed, and he felt a strange feeling of peace and tenderness, something he hadn't felt since childhood. She came to his side without smiling.
Don't be afraid, Paxton Seabolt. My name is Mrs. Rathbrook. With your permission, I will heal you.
I don't fear you, he said.
His voice sounded reverent to his own ears. Paxton openly stared at the woman. He had expected the royal lash to be much younger. He'd never seen a lashed person of her age, or one in such good health. Mrs. Rathbrook had to be in her 60s. Emotions he hadn't allowed himself to feel for many years rose up and overflowed his system. The words poured out against his will.
My grandmother was lashed.
He'd never said those words out loud. A pang of fear for his family tightened inside his chest, until Mrs. Rathbrook took his mangled hand in her own. Looking down at his injury, she said,
I know. I knew Margaret Seabolt well.
Paxton's heart kicked.
You knew her?
Shh, let me work.
The woman held his hand, touching his skin around the injury on his arm without brushing the torn flesh.
You'll feel heat. It will be uncomfortable for a moment. Stay still.
Paxton nodded and the woman closed her eyes. His heart went erratic, but it had nothing to do with the magic pouring into him. She knew his grandmother. He became so engrossed in his thoughts that he hardly noticed the intense heat rushing through his veins, straight to his hand where the magic flamed, stitching his skin and muscle back together. He watched in awe as purple lines fused in the tiny space of white at the bottom of her nails. Her entire fingernails were purple, with the exception of two paper-thin white lines near the top. Mrs. Rathbrook let out a hum of satisfaction. Her cool hands moved across his chest. He closed his eyes as she worked, and allowed himself to fully remember his grandmother for the first time in so long. Her tiny cottage on the ocean where she lived by herself after his grandfather's passing at sea. While Tian ran about in the sand, picking up shells and terrorizing crabs, Paxton gravitated to his grandmother's side. He'd known she was special before he knew she was lashed. He experienced that same static energy in her presence. Their grandmother Seabolt had looked after the boys during the day, while their father fished and their mother haggled with vendors. He recalled the summer morning when he was 8, and a woman round with pregnancy came bursting into his grandmother's cottage.
It's not moving. Something is wrong. I can sense it. Please help me, miss.
Paxton had been confused by the woman's frantic pleading. He couldn't understand what his grandmother could possibly do to help. His grandmother had gone an ashen shade of grey.
I cannot help you. I'm so very sorry.
Please,
the woman had begged, her shaking hands splayed across her belly.
I know you're lashed. My own mother told me. I know you can feel for its heart and...
She began crying.
This is my 6th pregnancy. None have lasted this long, please.
Paxton had hated the sad feeling that overtook him at the woman's desperate sobbing, and the way his grandmother's eyes filled with tears.
If I help you, I will be killed when they do the census. I have grandsons to care for. I cannot risk it. Please, you must go.
Paxton's eyes burned as the memory faded, and a hot bout of flame overtook the skin at his waist. He hissed and watched in awe as the bloodied claw marks sealed themselves between the woman's splayed fingers. Mrs. Rathbrook's creased forehead relaxed, and she opened her eyes.
There now, good as new.
Thank you.
He slowly pushed himself up, marveling at the lack of pain. But the woman placed a hand on his shoulder and urged him to lie back.
Magic can take a toll on the body. You'll need to rest for a bit and eat something.
She pushed a cart to his side filled with sliced fruit, bread, juice, and dark coffee, a delicacy imported from the forests of Kalor.
Thank you, he said again.
Mrs. Rathbrook gave him a small smile and pushed his hair out of his face. When she turned to go, he called out,
Wait.
She faced him again, her head tilting.
She wasn't very old when she died,
Paxton said. He felt like a child, unable to hold back the words, remembering.
Her health declined so quickly.
Aye.
Mrs. Rathbrook nodded solemnly.
As do all lashed who do not use their powers.
Paxton sat up, wincing, and the woman gently pushed him back down.
Easy now.
He propped up on his elbows to see her face better.
So the two are linked, a lashed one's health to their magic.
Aye, how do you think I've lived this long?
Indeed, it was just as he'd feared.
I thought perhaps lashed had shorter lifespans by nature, or that some were sickly from a lack of nutrition. I hoped it was coincidence.
He felt like a fool for not acknowledging the truth of it sooner. He lay back, staring at the ceiling.
I miss her.
Deep sighs. He hadn't spoken of her in years. He expected to feel weak after vocalizing his feelings, but he didn't. He felt only loss and regret.
I'm sure you do.
The lashed woman murmured in return. She gave his cheek a fond pat.
I hope you'll visit me whenever you're in the castle, Paxton Seabold.
And with that, the woman with magic hands left him, and Paxton fell back, rubbing his eyes, chest burning with familiar anger. His grandmother could have lived longer had she used her magic. He could still have her today if it weren't for the law of the land. Chapter 18. Princess Arity woke with a start as she remembered the hunters leaving for last night's hunt. She untangled her long nightgown from the covers and ran to the window, heart racing as she threw aside the thick curtains. Her eyes squinted against the bright morning sky as she scanned the people below. Her stomach turned, realizing there were definitely fewer hunters, and they didn't seem to be celebratory. Some were milling about, taking off their weapons. Others were clustered in small groups, slumped as they spoke. She recognized three of the Zandali in all black, facing the wall on their knees as if praying. Had they lost one? Arity's stomach dropped in sadness. She scanned the crowd and found fewer dark-haired men. There was Harrison's short hair, thank the seas. He seemed well, and her stomach began to right itself. She spotted Tyrn Seabolt next. Her eyes circled all around him, but didn't find his brother at his side. Where was Paxton Seabolt? The brothers were always together. Air moved faster into her lungs, pressed out in short spurts. She shouldn't care this much. He'd never even been civil to her. Still, concern ate at her. She jumped from the window seat and snatched her robe from the hook, throwing it over her arms. Arity yanked open the door and found her maid standing there with a tray. Catrin jumped and let out a small squeal.
I'll be right back.
Arity ran past her.
But miss, your highness, your shoes.
It wasn't proper to be seen outside her chambers in nightclothes, and it was even more uncivilized to be seen barefoot. Arity didn't care, driven by some frantic fear for a complete stranger. She ignored the open stares from servants as she passed, and she barely noticed the guards following as she burst from the castle doors and ran down the path to the West Commons area. It wasn't until she neared the vine-covered gates and men came into view that she began to worry about her state. Based on the gawking of the guards at the gates, she must have looked a fright, tangled hair and all. She stopped and peeked through the end of the gate until she found Tyrn again. He appeared stern as he cleaned his boots, but not heartbroken. Arity hastily ran her finger through her hair and twisted it over her shoulder. She then moved forward, speaking to the closest guard.
Excuse me, can you please fetch that lad, Tyrn Seabolt? I wish to ask him about the hunt.
He glanced at her bare feet and blinked before obeying. Arity wiggled her toes against the cool stones, feeling foolish and nervous as guards watched her. Tyrn ventured out of the commons and stopped in his tracks at the sight of her. She resisted the urge to smooth her hair back again.
I apologize for my appearance. I was eager to hear how last night went.
Tyrn's face darkened as he recalled it.
Is your brother all right?
She blurted before he'd had a chance to speak. His eyebrows rose.
Aye. He's in the castle for his injuries, but he'll heal.
Arity let out a breath, embarrassed.
What happened then? Did you see the beast? Has it been killed?
Her blood pumped rapidly, only slowing when Tyrn gave a regretful shake of his head.
It still lives.
The princess was torn between disappointment that the beast would live another day, and relief that the fate of her future marriage was not yet sealed.
What happened out there?
Tyrn retold the night's events, each detail making Arity's skin crawl. Arity considered calling Harrison over to discuss it all, but hot shame filled her at the thought of him seeing her like this. He'd only laugh and tease her, but he knew her well enough to know she had to have been out of sorts to leave her room in such a state. She thanked Tyrn and rushed back into the castle before one of her parents or aunts caught sight of her. 20 minutes later, she bustled down the infirmary hall, wearing her favorite pale pink gown, cinched extra firm at her waist, and dipping a bit lower at the top than her other dresses. She told herself she'd grabbed it from her wardrobe at random, but she knew it was a lie. Arity stopped a nurse her age. The girl's eyes widened, and she dipped into a curtsy.
Your Highness.
Hello, miss. Can you please tell me where the hunter Paxton Seabolt might be? Certainly, Princess. Last door to your left.
Arity rushed to the closed door and paused, hesitating with a hand pressed to her nervous stomach. She only wanted to see him, to see for herself that his injuries weren't too grave, and then she would leave. She knocked softly, but heard nothing. After a few seconds, she slowly pushed the door open and peeked inside. A gas lamp dimly lit the room. Arity held her breath as she beheld a sleeping Paxton on the cot, one arm curved over his head, and the other draped across his middle. He lay shirtless, his brown trousers slung low. Muddied leather boots were splayed on the floor. She stared openly from the doorway at his body. It was the most skin she'd ever seen on a grown man. He had a small, brown trail of hair down his taut stomach. Arity found herself holding her breath as the air around her closed in. She wondered how it would feel to touch him, this lad she hardly knew who intrigued her so. High seas. Why did her skin feel so prickly and her blood so heavy? He was obviously well. She needed to close the door and leave before someone caught her staring. But then Paxton inhaled a ragged breath and sat up, as if waking from a dream. His eyes were alert and untrusting as they darted around the room, landing on the princess. Arity gripped the door, caught.
I'm sorry, she said. I didn't mean to wake you. I only wanted to see how you fared. You look healthy.
She swallowed and backed up.
I'll leave you to rest.
Wait.
He slung his legs over the side of the cart and gripped the edge.
Have you seen my brother?
Arity stopped and nodded. He told me what happened last night. I can't believe it can swim. Paxton dragged a hand through his dirty hair and grimaced.
Aye, that complicates things indeed.
He was speaking to her in a civil manner. Arity hid her surprise. The hunter looked down at his abdomen and then back up at the princess. He rubbed a hand down his stomach.
I'm not sure where my tunic's gone. It was bloodied.
Arity waved off his comment with a shaking hand and said, It's all right, as if she were used to being in the presence of half-naked, attractive men. Do not look at his chest or his stomach.
Only a few Calorians remain to hunt, Paxton said. They were extraordinary last night. They attacked it and gave chase.
He was being awfully chatty. Perhaps a near-death experience would do that to a person.
Tiern said you did the very same thing, attacked it without fear.
Paxton shook his head and paused as he looked down at his hands.
It wasn't enough. I was like a rag doll against its power.
Ah, so Paxton Seabolt had been humbled. His hair was a mess and she wanted to brush it from his face.
But it won't be so next time, he said, his voice lowering. I know the beast's weakness now, and I will kill it.
Paxton's eyes bored into hers. His words echoed in her mind. He wanted to kill the beast, and if he did, he would become her husband. Arity felt a heady rush of bravery. She glanced over her shoulder at the empty hall, and then let the door slide closed behind her. She swallowed hard and leaned against it. Oh, lands below, what had she done? She just closed herself in a room with him. Her mother would die if she found out. Gossip would fly.
I don't want our conversation to upset anyone, Arity explained lamely.
Paxton crossed his arms, examining her, scrutinizing.
If you knew anything about us villager lads, you'd know better than to shut yourself in with one of us.
His eyebrow rose and fell provocatively. Her mouth dropped open. This had been a very bad idea. Very bad indeed. Paxton might be a brave hunter, but she didn't know this man at all. And he was right. The kind of flirting banter popular among commoners was seen as inappropriate among royalty, though he made no move to come near her.
You're a cheeky one, Arity managed to say,
trying and failing to cover her embarrassment. Paxton's mouth pulled to the side in a smirk that made her stomach flip.
You've no idea, princess.
She'd only wanted to continue talking in private. Instead, she'd made things horribly awkward. At a loss, the princess blurted,
My cousin saw the beast. She... it killed her fiancé.
The words made her lightheaded. Paxton's face dropped.
Lady Wyneth, I'd heard the captain was engaged to the king's niece, but I never put it together.
He stared past her shoulder in thought. Then his eyes slid back to hers with newfound intensity.
It will die. Your cousin and all the others will be avenged.
Good. Arity cleared her throat against the dry croak that had invaded, made worse by Paxton Seabrook.